Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Seeking Witchcraft. I'm your host, Ashley, and today I have on a returning guest, my very own High Priestess, Arlie. Welcome back, Arlie, to the show.
Thank you. It's been a long time since we sat on your couch discussing witchcraft with your iPhone. It's come a long way, but I'm honored to be back. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming on. And yes, for those who don't know, Arlie is my High Priestess, which I just mentioned. And as she said, yeah, we've come a long way from the beginning of this podcast. And now we are recording virtually on the internet with mics and more professionalism than I definitely had recording on my iPhone 6S back in the day.
What a time to be alive, man.
Well, today, in honor of spooky season, and we're recording in the first week of October, we are going to discuss all things related to Ouija boards. Woo!
Yes.
So I guess the first question is for Arlie, and I guess anybody listening, is what is a Ouija board? Is it this evil demonic thing that all of the movies and TV shows tell us? Like, what exactly is this that we're talking about?
Yeah. So it's a piece of wood that talks to you. No, I'm kidding. In its simplest definition, a Ouija board is a board with a full alphabet and numbers ranging from 0 to 9 that suggests communication with the paranormal, supernatural, or even preternatural. Before its patent, these were commonly referred to as talking boards. The communication that you receive is guided by what's called a planchette, which is an object made of light material that is typically a pyramid-shaped object with a small circular glass or plastic window that allows participants to view the specific letters and numbers that the board is attempting to convey as a response to the participants' questions.
Great. And I think a lot of people may have seen this. You can even see it like a pattern on clothes or hats or jackets, especially during Halloween time. It's a really popular sort of print to see on apparel and such. I know I have some Ouija board pillows at my house and a keychain. I even have a planchette beer opener, which is severely underused. I really should use that more. But yeah, Ouija boards, I think, have turned into this fun, I was going to say fun family friendly activity, but okay, back. I don't know if family friendly is the right word, but have come from this sort of supernatural thing to, I think, like more prominent in pop culture, with some people saying it's like this evil demonic portal to hell and other people just happy to have it on a pillow like me.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You know, it went from being a very spiritual object to a family fun object to back to being, you know, super evil and all these negative connotations to a pillow. So yeah, it's going through a lot of.
So I guess I should ask, like, so how do you know how this became associated with communicating with spirits? Like, was that always the intended use of these things? Because I'm not totally sure of the history. I'm not sure if you know the intricate details of this, but I know it was, and you referenced this, it was patented by a toy company at some point, but I don't really know, like, did they always expect it to be something you could use to talk to grandma? Like, I don't even know what the process of this really was.
Yeah. So, and that's a really good question. So one thing that we should understand is that the Ouija board is not the first of its kind. So the modern day Ouija board is actually based off spirit boards that became very popular long before its time. So there was a huge influx of quote unquote spirit communication during the 1800s. You know, think the Civil War when people are waiting to hear back from their loved ones via letters and they can't hear them or speak to them. They turn to spiritualism where they contact something from the dead. And that's really where we see it pick up in the 1800s. But that really led to this influx of seances, hell, even before the 1800s. But yeah, no, Parker Brothers production played a big part in contributing to its reputation, given the fact that it gained a significant increase in exposure to someone going to a store and picking out a toy for their kid. But after users of the board were unable to explain how the planchette seemingly moved on its own, they were left to conclude that they were indeed speaking with spirits. You know, are you moving it? Was that you? It wasn't me. You know, things like that definitely fueled the natural curiosity that people, witches and non-witches alike, you know, what we all possess. And additionally, when the funny thing, when this was first filed for a patent, the patent office allegedly asked for proof that the board even worked before considering, you know, administering the patent. And ultimately, the Ouija board was used to spell out the chief clerk's name, and the rest is history. They gave him the patent. So, you know, from there, they're like, oh my God, it works. You're using spirits. But honestly, though, I think the biggest modern influence on its reputation for spirit communication actually came from the, you know, the notorious story of Roland Doe, which you may know from William Peter Blatty's book, The Exorcist. So, you know, in this true story, we learn that Roland used a Ouija board with a relative shortly before or during the time he began experiencing signs of possession. And I think that truly The Exorcist brought the Ouija from a casual curiosity and a toy, once it got into, you know, Parker Brothers' hands, and into the sights of paranormal enthusiasts and thrill seekers and, you know, witches, as well as those who swear to never touch the board in fear of its evil reputation.
So I'm totally jumping ahead here, but you bring up The Exorcist and you bring up possession, and just, I guess, do you think that using a Ouija board can lead to possession?
To put simply, no. I don't think that the Ouija board itself is an evil object. I think that a big topic that needs to be discussed on this is the fear aspect. You know, it's fear is a very natural emotion and force to have. And I think that when people use the Ouija board or attempt to use it, even they feel fine at first, but they continue to use it when they're being very fearful of it. You know, especially as witches, we have to identify that fear is such a powerful thing, and that can leave, you know, holes and vulnerabilities in our, you know, our psychological minds and our spirits. And I think that, whereas, no, I don't think that a Ouija board can allow you to be possessed. There's definitely something going on. You know, obviously Ouija boards work and you don't have to be a witch to experience a Ouija board. I don't think that a Ouija board itself is what's going to lead to a possession.
I agree with you. I also don't think that Ouija boards, just the act of using one or even owning one or being in the same room as one, will lead to possession. I think that the fear aspect definitely has a play in that, like you mentioned as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, let me ask, there's so much fear around things like Ouija boards, but then you'll hear, like, I know people personally who won't even be in the same room with them, the same house with them. They get extremely upset if they're used, but then these same people will own a pendulum and they'll use that without any problems or without any fears or anxieties. Do you think that there is a big difference between a Ouija board and other forms of spirit communication like pendulums?
Yeah, I mean, that relies heavily upon the concept of, like, you know, divination, like pendulums versus fortune telling devices versus paranormal mechanics. You know, we as witches are in such a unique stance towards something that's not witchcraft by giving it a place in our lives as witches. So, you know, this can't be said for everyone, of course, as you, again, don't need to be a witch to experience that Ouija board experience. But I think the difference here is how to approach it. So with a Ouija board, it depends on the audience, right? So when using something like a pendulum is more often used for divination and is secondarily used for paranormal identification, often by those who have no history of practicing divination, and that's totally okay. But given the lax use and intention projected onto the use of a Ouija board, I personally wouldn't view or recommend the Ouija board as a tool for, like, effective spirit communication. I don't think that a pendulum, as like your example, provides the same feelings and fears and anxieties that a Ouija board does. So do I think that a spirit is guiding your pendulum? Maybe as a witch, but I don't think that, you know, a child can use a pendulum and determine the bigger questions that we would ask as witches.
That's a good point. Would you consider a Ouija board as a friendly tool for beginners to use?
Yes and no. Friendly is a very interesting word to use.
I should say like a user-friendly tool to use, like a easy tool to use.
In that sense, yes. Because again, you know, anybody who's anybody can experience something with a Ouija board. I don't think that this should be an introduction to what to expect with divination or even mediumship practices. I think that a big part that Ouija boards play in our natural curiosities as human beings, and especially those of us who have always been fascinated by the paranormal, or even us witches who do kind of walk that thin line between the other worlds around us and the mundane world, you know, I think that it's a good tool to experience the, you know, a doorway opening, or to have a glimpse as to what can happen that's unexplained, but is absolutely happening in front of your eyes. But I don't think it's a good quote unquote beginner tool for someone who's expecting divinatory results from this. I think it's more of a curiosity object that can feed us looking into other forms of the unknown and answering those questions.
So along that same line of answering questions in the unknown, do you think that seances and Ouija boards have any sort of similarities?
I would say it really depends on the driver. So what I mean by that is, plainly speaking, with the modern day use of a Ouija board, I would say no. If you call it the people who were first using spirit boards or talking boards, my opinion then would lean more towards a yes. However, using that same driver analogy, I would speak in a modern sense and say that it completely depends on the participants and those directing the Ouija board session. You know, anything can become a seance. A Ouija board is kind of just razzle-dazzle if done properly, you know what I mean? So it really depends on the participants, the tone of the room, you know, reading your audience, and the driver, really.
I also wonder, too, it could possibly depend on the setting that you're in, too. If you're using a Ouija board in a quote-unquote haunted house versus, I don't know, your school, if you would get a different result.
Yeah, I mean, you can honestly, and I have, I mean, you can use Ouija boards anywhere. I personally haven't really experienced a difference in using it in a, you know, haunted house, quote unquote, or using it in your car. I really haven't noticed a difference. I mean, the Ouija board is going to work when it wants to work, right? But I think that there is definitely an advantage to your surroundings. You know, again, as witches, we understand that setting the environment really opens up doors to certain parts of ourselves that we access when we're doing things as witches, like rituals or circles or all the crazy things that we witches do. And I think that if someone is a little hesitant in going into it and not, they don't really know how to break the ice of the stigmas or even kind of cast away their own disbelief in the board, I think that there's definitely something to be said about the environment that you use it in, you know, in a darkly lit room, you know, with candles and whatnot. It definitely sets the tone. And I think that it should be experimented with, because you might be surprised at the results on what different environments do for the actual session.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. And we are, for those listening, going to get into the usage and talk about things like that, like the ideal setting. So just hang on tight for that. So let me ask this question then. Do you think that the Ouija board is unfairly stigmatized, or is there some truth to this hype around it?
First and foremost, yes and no. You know, whatever experience or preconceptions of Ouija boards you may have, they're completely valid. And, you know, everyone has a right to feel the way that they do about them and their experiences they have with them. But second, people can absolutely experience frightening things within the realm of their own fears. You do not have to use a Ouija board if you're scared, and honestly, you shouldn't. So when dealing with the implications of a Ouija board, we're also dealing with all the implications of the quote-unquote spirit realm. this is a loosely guarded object. And what I mean by that is that, you know, these Ouija boards don't come with instructions on basic spiritual hygiene. So yeah, I do definitely believe, as a witch who does encourage spiritual hygiene, that there's a high risk for those who do not have that good spiritual practice. And as you know, I've said before, with you not having to be a witch to see results in a Ouija board, this is both the allure and the fear factor. You know, many people expect folks who are trained in spiritual practices to have the best results, and that's simply not true. The reality of how accessible the Ouija interaction is both exciting to the appropriate communities and terrifying to those on the opposite side. You know, we cannot underestimate the power of fear, and as such, we can't underestimate how the Ouija board can activate the downsides of fear when certain folks are exposed to it. So I think the stigma is really in the reactions that people have, but scary things can happen because it's the unknown.
Okay. And speaking of scary things, so here's a question for you. And I actually have a story for this, and I want to ask about your experiences using a Ouija board. But before I do that, what are your thoughts on Zozo, the Ouija board demon?
Oh, I'm happy you asked me that, because Zozo, let me tell you.
And for those who don't know, Zozo is the quote unquote Ouija board demon. That's what people say. It's, you know, you'll be using a Ouija board and suddenly you'll ask the name and they'll spell Z-O-Z-O. And that's like a common occurrence that people have had using Ouija boards. So yes, Arlie, what is your opinion on this?
Well, whereas I am not the Ouija board president, I can tell y'all right now that y'all can fucking chill when it comes to Zozo. Zozo is not a thing. I am telling you, like, because I was, you know, obviously I have a fascination of Ouija boards. Otherwise, I wouldn't be on this show talking about Ouija boards. But anyway, no, Zozo is a very new concept that only came out in the past several years. Honestly, there's virtually no trace of Zozo interactions before like 2009. There's literally nothing. And I think that this goes back into this consistent fear element that I've been bringing up in this episode, is that fear is a hell of a thing. You know, it can cause so many secondary things that just feel very real. And they're valid because you feel them, but I think it's a very different thing than what you think it is. I do know, as far as Zozo, you know, most of what we see about Zozo, you see from like no sleep stories and creepypastas and internet stories. I will say, when I did a deep dive on Zozo, because I was trying to prove myself both right and wrong at the same time, there was a man, Darren Evans, actually, I think it was based out of Oklahoma. He had posted about this Zozo story on a true ghost sharing website. Apparently Zozo had attacked his daughter in the bath. She got sick, spent like 2 weeks in the hospital. And this story on a random website, it got so viral. There was like a movie made about it. I think it was called like I Am Zozo, or just maybe even just Zozo. I think it came out between 2010 and 2012. So you have the movie element that is, you know, not unlike the aspect of a story going viral on the internet. I know there was a Ghost Adventures episode in shortly after this, so between 2013, 2014, where Zozo had already blown up, you know, with the aid of the internet story and the movie and et cetera. And of course, Ghost Adventures is a huge show. You know, everyone knows, you know, Zach Bagans and Ghost Adventures and et cetera. I think a Zozo, another movie came out about Zozo a couple years even later after that. I mean, it's a viral phenomenon that people have contributed so much fear towards. They're letting that fear take the wheel, and it's taking on its own identity. I think that if I were to propose the best metaphor for how I've referenced fear in this entire episode, it's Zozo. It's just a manifestation of fear. Y'all can chill the fuck out about Zozo.
I think in an alternate universe, Zozo and Slender Man are best friends.
Oh, at least distant cousins, for sure.
All right, cool. Well, I have some Ouija board experiences I want to talk about, including one with Zozo. And I definitely want to hear about yours too. And we are going to talk about how to use a Ouija board, but we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back in a moment. Spark something uncommon this holiday season with incredible hand-picked gifts from Uncommon Goods. They take the hassle out of holiday shopping by curating unique, handcrafted items from around the world for everyone on your list. These gifts inspire joy, surprise, and that perfect "this is it" moment. Whether you're shopping for family, friends, or your entire coven, Uncommon Goods knows exactly what they want. Here are a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their site that I would like for myself. First, there's a tarot card necklace that holds 22 miniature major arcana cards, and I thought this was so unique it would honestly be super fun to whip out at parties for spontaneous tarot card readings. They also have these birthstone wishing balls that are hand-blown colorful globes where you can slip tiny pieces of paper into it with a written wish on it, and I'd say you could easily use these as a subtle way to cast a spell. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the US. They even have gifts that you can personalize. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/Ashley. That's uncommongoods.com/ASHLEY for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Okay, welcome back. I just want to say my Zozo experience really quick just because we just talked about it and I don't want it to get lost in translation. But my quote unquote story with Zozo with a Ouija board is it's kind of convoluted, so I'll try to shorten it. Long story short, I was a manager at this camping EDM festival, and I found that the property that we would have our festivals at, one of the properties, was like severely haunted, like part of the Underground Railroad. People had killed themselves there. There was a cemetery on site, you know, the whole nine yards, naturally. And word got out through the years about the property that we were using. And so a friend of a friend brought a Ouija board, and she swore up and down that she talked to somebody named Zozo. I find out about this, you know, later on through the weekend. And I'm like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. On the last day of the festival, it was just myself and the rest of the staff. We were kind of just hanging out, relaxing after everybody had left. And I was in the staff house on the property. And the staff house was like this big house with, it used to be an actual home, but it was like very, very, very old. Like there wasn't even like an actual functioning kitchen in it. Like that's how old it was. And I was sitting in the living room talking to one of my friends, looking at the fireplace, and I noticed this like trophy looking thing on the fireplace. And I turned to my friend, and I was just like, oh, what's that trophy sitting there? Like, that's kind of weird. Because it was obviously decor from the people who own the property, because they still kind of used the house and had like paintings up and such, like, you know, decorations. And my friend looks at me and they go, Ashley, that's not a trophy, it's an urn. And I was like, oh, what do you mean that's an urn? So I get up and I walked to the urn, and there was a plaque on the urn, and there was a name. I believe it was a Polish language that was on this plaque, but the initials of the person who was on the plaque were Z-O. So that was my quote unquote Zozo story, because I remembered the Ouija board and I was just like, I don't think this person talked to Zozo. I think they talked to whoever was in the urn that just happened to also have the initial Z-O. But yeah, so that was my Ouija board story. I've used Ouija boards, so I have more personal stories, but that was one that just sticks out as being super wild to me. But I'd love to hear about your crazy Ouija board story.
So I, to be honest, I've used them hundreds of times, but there are definitely a few things that come to mind. And actually, it was my last experience using a Ouija board. I can safely say that I've never really had like a dangerous or negative or truly frightening experience with one. But I will say my last interaction with a Ouija board session, my best friend Crystal and I were outside at my old house, and my old house was kind of in the middle of nowhere, middle of the woods on 2 acres, blah. And we're sitting outside. It's at night. And she and I have used Ouija boards together over the years so many times. And I usually get the most activity on a board when I use it with her. But this particular night, we weren't really getting a lot of responses. The planchette was moving very slowly, very strange. And I even think it was in October. So ultimately, we're like, okay, well, it's just not the night for it. Let's go ahead and just shut this down. And suddenly, from behind her, so her back was facing about an acre of just woods behind her leading out to a creek bed. And we hear what sounds like a large animal, like it, we're assuming a deer, run up on us. We hear the stomping, the galloping. We hear it interacting with the leaves and the twigs around it. And it's like rushing up on us. Like it's coming up on us fast. And I do have nowadays, as a witch, you know, I always have my Athame with me when I use a Ouija board. And I remember I had it laying next to me near the board, and I hear it come up. And I remember I grabbed my Athame, and with the proximity of noises, it sounds like it stopped right behind us, which we had like one big bush directly behind her, and it stops. But we hear it like just, you know, kind of just, I don't know, interacting with the environment. We hear the leaves, the crunching. So we're wondering what the hell made this huge noise? What's running up on us? We can't see a deer, and it's not, you know, it's obviously loud enough to where we know it's not a raccoon, it's not a cat, it's not a squirrel. And I remember, you know, I'm holding my Athame, and I've stood up at this point, and I would just make a random loud noise, you know, to scare whatever it is off, but we never hear it run away. And this bush is relatively close to us. It's about maybe between five and eight feet behind her back. And if it were a deer or some other large animal, we would have seen something. And we were out there probably another 30 minutes or so, never saw it, never could determine what this animal was. And then it just stopped making noises. So it just seemingly ran up on us and got very close. And so I grabbed my Athame, stood up, made a noise, and just apparently disappeared into the void. So that was definitely strange and definitely related to the time they were using the Ouija board outside.
Oh my gosh. Well, speaking of strange occurrences, as Arlie was telling this story, we actually just had to do a second recording because my entire computer, my internet just like cut out of nowhere. And it just took me about like 20 minutes just to get everything back up. It was really, really strange.
Girl, Zozo is pissed. Like,
Zozo's like, don't you dare associate me with Slender Man. So this ended up being a haunted episode. It's fine. But all right. Well, thank you, Arlie, for sharing your story, because that was quite an adventure for us over the last 20 minutes. But yeah, for the listeners, you guys did not have to go through that journey with us. So there we go. All right. So I guess we should kind of just jump into usage. So let me ask the basic question. Arlie, how do you use a Ouija board?
Yeah. So I think that's a lot more simple than people think. Honestly, if you approach it with an open mind and do not approach it with any anxieties or fear, most of the time, something's going to happen. What I would say is, as a witch, you know, as probably the majority of people who listen to this podcast, I would suggest physically cleaning the board, not just with water, but also with salt. And of course, as witches, better it be consecrated salt and consecrated water. I usually just have a paper towel, you know, nothing super formal. Wipe it down with the salt water first, give it a few minutes to dry, and then proceed with your session. You know, there's a few other things that I would say are some do's and don'ts, but that's the basic way of approaching the board respectfully and in a safe environment.
Nice. I appreciate that. Very straightforward. Do you need any sort of special materials, like any, you know, like holy water blessed by a priest? Do you need consecrated salt, things like that?
I wouldn't say that, no. I mean, honestly, and again, this goes back into what I mentioned about the allure of the Ouija board, is even if you don't take these, like, you know, experienced precautions and experienced, you know, tried and trusted mechanisms to ensure a safe approach, honestly, the Ouija board is going to work regardless. I think 8 out of 10 times I've experienced a Ouija board session, we get some kind of results. There really doesn't need to be any formal opening, any formal, like, you don't have to cast a certain ritual for it or cast a circle. The Ouija board is going to work regardless. That's why it's such a popular curiosity.
So in terms of using the Ouija board itself, do you need to warm up the planchette? I know I've been in Ouija board sessions where people claim you need to go in a figure eight with it for a while to kind of get it ready for the board. Do you need to do anything like that?
I don't personally think so, no. I think that the feeling, like physically feeling the planchette moving, even if you're manually doing it yourself in such a manner like you described, like, you know, you're manually moving it across the board in whatever fashion you want to, I think that physically understanding how easily the planchette can move and what to physically expect by feeling it move can allow participants to be more open to the automatic movement of the planchette. I don't think this implies any spiritual advantage, but I think that especially if you're not used to how the movement of the planchette feels like physically, kind of, you know, just moving it around very gently will give you an idea as to what to expect, and you're not so closed off to those subtle movements that can be an indication of the planchette beginning to.
So what about in terms of when you're using the Ouija board and it's moving and you are done with the session? I've heard people say you have to say goodbye, otherwise the spirit won't leave, or, you know, bad things will happen and you'll open a portal to hell, whatever people say. Do you have to say goodbye? And if you do, what do you do if a spirit will not say goodbye?
So whereas I cannot personally confirm where that custom came from, I can at least say that this is something that I've practiced since day one of using the board. I think it's a good healthy practice to use with such a loose-ended object like this. For me, the fact that each board comes with goodbye already printed on it kind of implies a certain expectation from any interaction experienced with the board. In times where, you know, because I'll always, you know, try and implore, you know, the person or thing that we're talking to say goodbye. In the times that they don't, and even specifically say no, what I do is I remind them as a witch, if they do not choose to say goodbye and disconnect, that I'm empowered to banish them against their will. And that if they don't say goodbye, I will do what needs to be done to disconnect the session and any lingering energies that are attached to their communication. If the environment begins to feel kind of spicy, typically, in the rare times this has happened, what I typically do is I'll ask the Archangel Mikael to oversee our communication and disconnection of the session. To date, I've never really had someone or something continue to deny saying goodbye when laying down these ultimatums and these boundaries, as it were. I do still make sure to trace a banishing pentagram on my board after those challenging goodbyes, just to be safe with my either just my fingers or even better so my athame, just to be safe, right? You can't be too safe. Spiritual attachments are no joke.
Yes. And for those who are wondering about the banishing pentagram, typically what I find is most people will do the earth banishing pentagram. So if you go online and look up what that looks like, that's it. I mean, I'm sure you could probably use any of the elemental banishing pentagrams, but I think the default is people typically use earth for that.
Yeah. I mean, earth is a good default, and it's also just also a very applicable element given that, you know, earth is the final elements, you know, when things are ending, when they're being banished to a long sleep or a long ending rest period, that's a good element to banish it with regardless. So it's still a good one to use.
So what are your thoughts on if a planchette is moving very slow versus very fast?
So both circumstances they're bound to happen. They're bound to happen. You know, we got to understand that whereas we may not have a confirmation of how exactly the planchette moves on its own, it will absolutely move differently based on who or what is behind its movement. I will say that if you're experiencing a Ouija session and every attempt to make contact with whatever the fuck is resulting in little to no movement, especially if you're just not getting any movement at all, just stop. Just stop the session. You know, do a basic, you know, cleaning of the board afterwards, detach yourself from that session, and just revisit it on a different night. There will absolutely, the more and more you use it, if you choose to do so, you'll notice that there are very active days, there's very active sessions, and there are some times where it just doesn't move at all, and that's okay. I would suggest just putting it down, saying goodbye, detaching, and trying again at a later date.
So one thing I want to mention from experience with using Ouija boards, and I'd love to hear you chime in on this too, is that when I've used Ouija boards, a lot of the times I have had like pretty big misspellings of words, but you can generally make out what they mean. And my take on that is that not all of the spirits that you're talk to are literate or speak English, or they are also spirits. Who's to say spirits understand English that well and how to spell things out. So I don't necessarily discount something if a spirit is unable to fully and properly spell out a word. If I can still understand it, then that's all that really matters to me. But that's just kind of my two cents on it. Arlie, what do you think about that?
This is a damn good point. And this is actually one of the things that has confirmed my interest in Ouija boards and why they continue to fascinate me, because I have had Ouija board sessions and I'm not bilingual. I would love to be bilingual, but I'm not. I have a base understanding of like incredibly common Spanish and incredibly common German, and that's it. And there have been several times that I've used a Ouija board with someone and it is literally speaking to us in a different language. And especially if you've prepared enough to have someone or even yourself write down the responses that you're getting. I literally had one time, my friend John and I were using it one night, and he and I, neither of us speak, oh, I feel so bad. I want to say the Hebrew language. I'm not sure there's a proper term for it, and I do apologize. But we learned that it was essentially speaking Hebrew to us. It was just saying these, it was saying things very effectively. It was moving in a good speed, but it was spelling out things that we could tell was not English, but it was saying something. And I wrote it down. And I remember I literally Googled it after the fact. And it's kind of funny because if I remember correctly, it was saying, you need to find God.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
I am so serious. Like, John, if you're listening to this, like, you'll remember back me up. But yeah, no, it's literally. And we've also had, I've had, you know, sessions where Spanish is being spoken. And I have enough understanding to know it was Spanish, but not to understand what it was saying. And that's wild, right? Because I don't know Spanish. The friends I've used it with don't know Spanish. John and I, of course, did not know the Hebrew language. So how in the world were, if this is all just a muscle reaction from the participants just saying subconscious things, how in the world were we able to produce a sentence in a different language that we don't know? And this is one of the things that fascinates me the most, because yes, you will absolutely experience that. Absolutely.
Spooky. So one thing that you and I have referenced is other people using Ouija boards or using Ouija boards with another person. And is it necessary to have a second person there for a Ouija board, or can you do this on your own?
Also a good question. I think a big cliche is that you should never use the board alone. And I agree. I very wholeheartedly agree. So going back to previous comments on fear, it's always a good idea to have someone with you. Just having a secondary presence can ground you. And sometimes that's all you need to dispel the fear. Even in the most seasoned of occultists, witches, paranormal enthusiasts, we're not immune to fear, right? So when you're alone and that hits you, it'll be very hard to end a session safely and effectively. I would say always have a buddy, you know, just to kind of check your vibe to make sure nothing else is going on with you. Because again, you're experimenting with something that's unknown. So you should always have someone there to check your vibe as well as the vibe around you.
I really like that explanation, because as I was asking that, I was thinking about what my own answer to that would be. And on one hand, I think that it's possible to use a Ouija board by yourself. I think like the usability is there, but I do like the idea of a second person being there, if anything, at least just to help take notes and help with the spellings of things. And maybe you have a bilingual friend who can help you decipher some of the language if the person you're communicating with does not speak English. So I think that for those reasons, it is good to have a second person there. Also, sometimes it's nice to have somebody else there to know that you're not going crazy, that, oh my gosh, this actually did happen. Or like, if you're using the board and a light goes out in the room, or you're talking about Ouija boards and your computer just decides to die in the middle of it, you know, that there's another person there for confirmation that actually happened. So for that reason, I do also agree that it is good to have a second person there. I do think, though, you can use it by yourself if you'd like to.
Oh, yeah. And I have used a board alone before, you know, to fuck around and find out so I can talk about it on a podcast 11 years later.
You know, as you do.
Right. I will say the effectiveness isn't really any different. It did move pretty slow for me. I've done this like once or twice, if that. I don't really think it affects the the response that you get from an active session. So I don't really think that there's more advantage to using it alone, but yeah, of course, I would suggest using it with at least one other person.
So is there anything that, let's say, you know, you're using the Ouija board, you have some salt and water, you have some incense going, it's all good, whatever, you know, you get the communication that you are looking for, or maybe you don't, but you're done using the board. Is there anything you should do after? Like, I've seen some people, not very culturally appropriative, but like using sage on the board to sage the spirits out of the room or whatever, or some people just chucking it in the trash can. I don't know. Is there anything somebody should do after using the board? And should anything differ if they have a very negative interaction with the board?
I think it's really good practice to at least have some sort of cleansing act after using the Ouija, if not for anything else, but to the fact that you were interacting with something that's unknown. And as witches, you know, we're at an advantage to utilize certain tools to clear energy out of a room, control energy in a room, redirect energy in a room. And I don't think it has to be anything super elaborate, depending on the experience that you had. I would say, for complete basics, you know, to just simply, again, wash the board with salt and water. I've also noticed that smoke cleansing, I've also noticed that smoke cleansings actually help to, while using the board, they actually help to increase slightly, but notably enough, the activity on the board. I think that's because of the nature of incense, with air being communication and sending up messages to gods and the spirits and whatnot. But after a successful Ouija session, I would definitely make sure to wash the board. And you can do this mindfully with the salt water, of course. Make sure that you're utilizing the aspects of salt and water for its cleansing and purification properties. Keep that board clean, and treat the board with respect. You know, treat it like an antique. You know, put it back in the box. Keep it somewhere safe. Also having, you know, a very small act of cleansing for participants, such as tracing. A really good one is tracing a banishing pentagram on the forehead. Typically when I do it, I'll use either a high ABV alcohol like vodka or something, even that's not alcoholic, like just salt water, right? And usually what I'll do personally is I'll envision the tracing of the liquid on the forehead as a fiery blue, kind of electric blue kind of flame as I'm tracing it, and then it slowly fades into the forehead of the person, or the third eye, if you will. If you do feel that you had a kind of turbulent or spicy session, depending on your experience and your personal practice, one of my big go-tos, as I kind of mentioned earlier, was the Archangel Michael. The Archangel Michael is very receptive to just simply asking for his presence, and he will help to clear out anything that's unwanted or anything that could harm you spiritually. Also, depending on your practice, the lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram, is the best thing to completely sanitize your surroundings. And I really suggest, I mean, first of all, it's a good practice to have, but especially if you feel that there was a particularly spicy interaction, I would say the Archangel Michael first, and then, of course, if you feel it has not cleared the space effectively, the lesser banishment.
I love the LBRP, the LERP. The LERP is great. Yes, it is. All right, so we're coming down on time here, but I have just a couple more questions I want to ask you. One of them is, when using a Ouija board, can you try to speak to a specific spirit, such as an ancestor or loved one? Or is it kind of just an energetic free-for-all, and whoever picks up the phone, as it were, is who picks up the phone?
This is one of the biggest opinions that I have on the board. Personally, I would never, ever, ever suggest requesting a specific person or entity. Seriously. 99% of the time, you're not going to get it. And even if you think that you do, it's more than likely an entity that's manipulating you to think that it's your loved one, relative, ancestor, whoever, which is a huge red flag that needs to be severed immediately. This is one of the biggest mistakes I think people make going into using a Ouija board. Someone can go into a Ouija board session, ask to speak with their, you know, deceased loved one, even, especially while holding on to significant grief, and contact something pretending to be said loved one. They pull the person in through a manipulative emotional state to a point where the person doesn't want to stop talking to their loved one. And if this isn't taken care of and stopped and explained to the participant, there's a very good chance that they'll be sucked into becoming obsessed with contacting the entity and allowing it to attach itself to them. And then shit just gets really, really bad. So please just keep an open mind as to what contacts you. Keep it open. I would highly, highly suggest to not make requests. Not everything in the spiritual world has your best interests in mind.
Absolutely. And if, let's say, grandma does come through on the other end, I would recommend ask questions for confirmation that only they would know.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Like very specific questions, not like, oh, what color shirt am I wearing? Because that's for any spirit. But more like, on my 12th birthday, what present did you give to me that my dad was upset about? You know, something like that. That's very specific and would only be known to that spirit.
And that's actually a really good point as well, because that's a very good control method to use in these sessions. Like, I know a habit that I eventually got into was I would ask the board, and I actually encourage everyone to do this, to confirm that it's just not someone else in your party manipulating the planchette. Ask the board a question that you know damn well no one else present knows the answer to. I actually have a control question that I usually always ask because I know no one else knows the answer. And additionally, if you do have unprovoked, have something come through that identifies as a deceased loved one, ask those control questions. I actually had this experience with a couple of friends. They were not witches. They were not spiritually inclined. Two other friends, but these friends and I had lost a friend a couple of years prior. Her name was Heidi, and I had her jacket in my closet from when she let me borrow it prior to her passing. They had no idea that jacket was in my closet. So this particular entity being, et cetera, that came through saying, oh yeah, I'm Heidi. And my friends were so excited. They weren't really used to using the board. They were like, oh my gosh, yes, I miss you, Heidi. I miss you. I'm like, hold on guys, hold please, pause. Heidi, what's the color of the jacket that I have of yours in my closet? And everything stopped. The planchette stopped moving. Everything stopped. And I'm like, we got to end this right now, y'all. Like, we've got to end this. That was not something you want to continue talking to. Those control questions are essential.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's probably like either the spirit was like, oh, just kidding, bye. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps a friend who might have been moving the planchette was like, oh, shit, I just got caught.
Right.
Never know. Because I think, too, sometimes the planchette can move, not necessarily because somebody's doing it on purpose, but I think sometimes it just happens.
Oh, yeah.
Without people realizing it. So that's another thing to consider, too. People get their backs get fatigued if they're sitting on the floor and it could happen. But it is really important to try to not touch it. One, you're not pressing down super hard on it, like you're trying to force it into the board, but you're touching it lightly and, you know, trying to be aware that you are not the one moving it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can very lightly touch it. Another thing also, a friend of mine, the same person from the story with the crazy invisible beast, another control aspect is you can literally ask the board questions in your head. You do not have to verbalize your questions. And that's another big one that I have found over the years is a big one, again, you know, control question that it can confirm for you that it's not your friends using it. But it's also just fucking neat, right? Like the fact that you're able to ask these questions, even if it's something that your friends may know, asking it silently, you know, obviously, of course, expressing that you're going to ask a question silently so they know to not just expect random silence. That's another thing you can try as well to confirm the activity on the board.
I feel like we could talk about Ouija boards all day. We have so many discussion points about this, but I want to try to keep this as concise as possible and lead to another question of if there are resources out there, if people want to learn more about Ouija boards, aside from listening to this episode, how or like what should people look into? Like, are there books, are there websites, YouTube channels? What do you got for us?
Yeah, so I will say there's not really a lot of books that can help with Ouija board use because it's so, again, it's such a loose-ended thing. What I will say is I would look into, if you're trying to experiment with anything in the unknown, is actually more along the lines of a good, you know, again, good psychic hygiene, right? You know, good psychic self-defense, things of that nature. One of the things that I would suggest even if you're not intending on ever using Ouija boards, but especially if you want to begin to fuck around and find out with them, is actually The Witch's Shield, Protection Magic and Psychic Self-Defense by Christopher Penzack. That way you can begin your journey of, you know, magical hygiene when approaching these topics, and you'll have a good foundation. Now, there's also, when it comes to Ouija boards, not necessarily the use of boards, but if you want to really go back into the history of the boards and learn kind of all the dots that connect this crazy muddy web of how the board even came to be, the best website that I have found is williamfold.com. So that's William, common spelling, W-I-L-L-I-A-M, Fold, F-U-L-D.com. This website is just it's an amazing effort of research done over the years as to how the Ouija came to be, understanding its history, and making it more accessible as something that's not so scary.
So I will go ahead and link that into the bio for this episode, along with any information of how to get in contact with you. But before I ask you for that information, for those who are looking to get started with a Ouija board, what is the most important piece of advice you would give them, aside from all the incredible pieces of advice that you gave tonight?
Yeah, absolutely trust your gut, and not just with what you contact through the board, but also with the people that you're doing the sessions with, the night, just the vibes. If you don't feel comfortable with a specific person being present, they do not have to be touching the board. They can just be in the room. You have every right to postpone the session until they are no longer involved. If you just had a Ouija session that previous night under the same circumstances with the same people, but the current night just feels off, you have every right to reschedule your planned session. If you've contacted something through the board that just doesn't sit right with you, even if it's acting friendly and your participants find it entertaining, you have a right to respectfully break contact. Always trust your gut. If it feels off, just stop.
I think that's a great piece of advice. The Ouija board can always be used at a different time. Mm-hmm. And like Arlie said, you can even use it in a car. So maybe not while you're driving, though. At least not with the car moving. You can fuck around and find out. Just don't be the one driving.
Safety first, y'all.
Safety first, y'all. Yes. On that note, though, Arlie, I ask everybody at the end of my episodes, aside from what I just asked you, what is a piece of advice you would give to a beginner who's just starting out that is not related to what we talked about today?
Ooh, so for beginner witches, not unlike some of the things that I've mentioned here about the curiosity, is to always mark your journey. Whatever in the moment has made you feel excited about witchcraft and excited about magic, hold on to that, because sometimes that initial spark, that initial interest, and that initial call to what we do can tether you back to who you are as a witch, even in times when you're not active and even in times where you're not feeling that connected with witchcraft. So always, always remember that spark and keep that, and always keep yourself tethered to that.
That was such an eloquent high priestess response that I really appreciate it, because sometimes I need to hear that for myself too.
I was telling myself, y'all, it's for me. No, I'm kidding.
Well, Arlie, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about this. I know there was a million other things we could have talked about with Ouija boards, but I know it's spooky season coming up. At least people have some good tips and tricks, and hopefully we'll try some out. But in the meantime, if people wanted to get in contact with you, how could they do that?
Yeah, so I'm mostly a Facebook person. So you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Arlie. That's A-U-R-A-L-E-A. Heart. Song, just like it sounds. I pretty much just stick to Facebook.
Cool. And are people allowed to send you a friend request or message you, or what's your boundary with that Facebook?
Yeah, so this Facebook is open contact. I, you know, obviously I have a private Facebook for privacy reasons, but this particular account is open to the broader craft community and even non-craft community, so I accept all requests and messages, so feel free.
Perfect. And then you have a tarot page too, right?
I do. It is linked on my Arlie page. The Facebook page is called The Fool's Journey, but the actual link is Tarot by Arlie.
Great. And I will also have a link to that in the episode description. And if anybody is interested in finding me, you can find me on Facebook at Seeking Witchcraft Podcast, although I might be making a backup like page. So if you see posts about that, keep an eye out. I am also on Instagram at Seeking Witchcraft. I have a personal Instagram if anybody's interested in that. It's at Spells and Kettlebells. I have a Twitter that I no longer use, but it exists, and that is at Seek Witchcraft. And I also have a Patreon. It is patreon.com/seekingwitchcraft. Pretty much if you Google Seeking Witchcraft, you will find me. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And thank you again, Arlie, for coming on to talk about Ouija boards during the spooky season of October. It is much appreciated, and I'm sure you are going to motivate some people to put on their inner witch hats and pull out a board and hopefully not summon the demons from hell.
We can skip those. Yeah, man, gotta keep spooky. Stay spooky, y'all.
Stay spooky. Bye, everyone.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.